WNYC Studios is supported by Dana-Farber Cancer Institute. Their scientists played a substantial role in developing more than half the drugs approved by the FDA in the last 5 years. At Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, what we do here changes lives everywhere. Find out more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hi, good morning. I'm Mike Peskin for Brian Lehrer on WNYC. We the people, in order to form a more perfect union, not perfect, more perfect, better. So a bit of humility, but also an admission. As much as the U.S. Constitution is hailed by all across the political spectrum, it is imperfect, flat out wrong in some areas, like slavery. It is in need of tweaks or outright nullification in some sections. Yet we hold the Constitution sacrosanct. Thomas Jefferson disagreed. He actually said the Constitution should be rewritten every 20 years. Enter Christopher Phillips. He's been conducting small group sessions where participants discuss and, yes, change the Constitution. These salons or cafes sprang out of a similar experiment with the Socratic method. And now the author of the Socrates Cafe has written Constitution Cafe. And we invite you to rewrite the Constitution with us. And hello, Christopher Phillips, and welcome to WNYC.
Hi, Mike. It's great to be back.
Thanks for coming back. So here's how we're going to do it. The question is, if you could rewrite one section of the Constitution or add a new one, what would it be? So the point is not to complain about a current specific interpretation, but to rewrite it anew. And we'll see if we could get a few calls on the same amendment clause or section, and we'll have a discussion. Before we get to that, tell me, Christopher, where did the idea come from? A specific comment made during your Socrates debates?
Well, it actually started probably about 30 years ago when I was a student at the College of William & Mary, where my fellow alumnus, Thomas Jefferson, attended a few years earlier than I did. But I immersed myself in studies of Jefferson, and I was fascinated by the idea that he considered the Constitution an organic document, something that should be changed over time to reflect, ideally, the progress of the human mind. He believed that if we left it mostly intact, we were actually doing the founders a disservice. He believed we should be hostile to all legacies, and that if our democracy was going to remain one with an experimental bent and become ever more inclusive and participatory, then we needed to revisit it every 20 years when a new generation of Americans emerged, and to find out, well, what type of government do they want? What type of rights and responsibilities do they want? I mean, you just mentioned we the people. Well, guess what? Those who wrote that segment, or then the entire Constitution for that matter, well, there were 55 affluent white guys, and they put in we the people, but that doesn't necessarily mean it was a document of we the people, because nobody asked the rest of the people. They didn't ask black Americans, didn't ask women, didn't ask middle class or poorer whites. So from the get-go, it wasn't a document that's necessarily reflective of the American mind.
All right. Well, guess what? Ed from Carroll Gardens. This is not going to be a group discussion, but you specifically wanted to change what in the Constitution, Ed?
In the very beginning of the preamble, say we the human living people, and make sure that all of the clauses and articles apply only to human beings, not to corporations who are erroneously thought to be humans.
And this this stems from recent Supreme Court rulings and the concept, I think Mitt Romney said it, well, corporations are people, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, it started actually at the just after the Civil War, where there was a clerk who put something in error in a Supreme Court decision. Actually, it wasn't even decided by the Supreme Court, but it gave corporations the same rights as citizens.
Well, I hadn't heard that one about the clerical error, but that's the sort of thing where the Constitution or the framers could not possibly have foreseen that there would be a different interpretation of people.
Well, guess what? And once again, it's Supreme Court justices have read into the document whatever they want to. It's mm-hmm. been exegetical thinking at its finest from the get-go. I'm wondering if we added we the human people, if that really would be a deterrent to the Supreme Court to making corporations people, because they could still say, well, what's a corporation made of? It's made of people. I think if you really want to give it more bite, you might have to specifically address the fact that you don't want corporations in any way, shape, or form to be considered tantamount to people. I'm wondering what Ed thinks.
Yeah, well, you know what? I shook Ed, so that was my fault.
Oh, I'm sorry, Mike.
No, it's my fault. I shouldn't have, and thank you for the call, Ed, because I'm in facilitating mood, not moving along and getting more comment mode, I have to realize. But tell me, how does this usually work? You get three, four people, a bunch of people in a bar reading the book. Things always seem to take place in a saloon or some other historic tavern where Thomas Jefferson once drank.
Well, it usually involves between 5 and 15 people. I held a number of them in Washington Square Park in Greenwich Village last year when I was teaching at NYU. I held a great one at the Green Dragon Tavern in Boston where participants added an article to the Constitution because the fact is that those who were the framers of our Constitution were self-selected. No one voted for them. No one even asked them if they should be the framers or not. So they created an article that spells out a democratic process for electing the people in the first place who create our supreme law of the land. And that makes sense. Otherwise, you'll have what you had at our Constitutional Convention in Philadelphia in 1787, a group of people who write it behind closed doors with no public record whatsoever.
So let's jump right in, and then I'm going to back up and answer some general questions. But let's talk about something specific. And a few of the callers want to talk about electing senators, I think. Doug from Glastonbury, Tony from Nassau County, and Bill from Dover. You're all on the air. And Christopher, do you want to take it from here?
I'll try.
Okay, go ahead.
Hello, what?
This is Bill.
Bill, they're all there.
I'm controlling the senators back to the state legislature.
Who is that? Who said that?
Tony.
Okay, so when you speak, identify by name. So Tony said it off, and he says he wants to have legislators elect the senators, which was in the original Constitution.
Uh-huh, that's right.
Bill?
Tony, why?
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. You go, Chris. I'll step back.
Yeah. Tony, why?
Well, I think that they're not – I think that by making it a popular election, senators don't look necessarily at what's best for the state as a whole, but look what's best for the population centers of the state. It gives too much power to, let's say, New York City – as opposed to upstate or eastern Long Island in New York. And in addition to that, it would make them more beholden to the state, so you wouldn't have as many pass-down type legislation where Washington decides what it wants and the rest of us have to pay for it.
Hey, this is Doug in Glastonbury, and I have just the opposite idea. You know, being a citizen of Connecticut, I should probably be happy that I have two senators. But I think that it's really pretty ridiculous that each state gets two senators for two reasons. First of all, it makes you hostage to these historical anomalies, like Maine being separated from Massachusetts because of a slavery compromise. And I just disagree with Tony. I mean, I think
Doug, what would you put? What'd your article say?
I would say that it would in a sense the senators would have to be a supersized version of the House of Representatives or the House of Commons. Because,
okay, thank you.
You know, the way it is now, I think that these senators are too. Take a look at, like, corn subsidy policy. Mm-hmm. They're too beholden to the interests of their narrow state rather than, you know, we the people.
Okay.
And the last
I have a different take on
go ahead,
this
Bill from
Bill.
Dover. Yeah, great.
My problem with the Senate is that it is highly unrepresentative. And I use the example of a senator from California represents 37 citizens for every one citizen that a senator from Wyoming represents. And the fact that you can get 50 senators starting from the smaller state populations, you can get 50 senators who represent only less than 20% of the U.S. population who then can vote something in. And if you talk about the cloture, 40 senators, it drops even further down. My solution to the problem is radical, and I admit it. I'm going to abolish the Senate, and I'm going to take those 200 seats and pass them over to the House of Representatives for smaller House of Representative districts and have, like the state of Nebraska, a unicameral legislature.
Ah, just, that's where Senator Bob Kerrey is from. That's right. They had a – okay. That's very interesting. Thank you so much.
Okay.
So when – if this were the Hogshead Saloon or the Green Dragon, what would you do with these people?
Well, we would try to come. I think we do both. Yeah. And in the meantime, we would try to work through their varying points of view until a majority came up with a consensus. And that takes time. You know, way back when, the idea was for all the states to have an equal number of senators so that a big state couldn't lord over a small state. And so we would ask, is that worry, concern still relevant today, or does it sort of keep our democracy out of whack? Other thing, the one who suggested that we go back to the days when the senators were elected by their state legislatures, as was the case, there's a very interesting little story about that. The states themselves wanted their constituents, the people of their states, to be able to directly elect the senators. The senators resisted because it was an encroachment on their power. So the states threatened to exercise a power that's given to them in the Constitution, but that has never actually been realized. That's in Article 5 of the Constitution that says the states can introduce an amendment, if two-thirds of them agree to it, and call for an amendment convention without needing the approval of Congress. Did you know that?
I did not.
Yes, the Senate backed down and allowed the amendment process to go through and ultimately to be approved by the states so that U.S. senators could be directly elected. Why? Because they feared that if the states did an end around and called an amendment convention, once that amendment convention is held, they don't just have to consider that one amendment for which they held the convention.
It's
they can amend
box.
The entire
yes, yes.
Constitution, which is basically an offbeat new constitutional convention. That's what I'm saying we need to do today.
When you have one of these Constitution cafes, do you come in as open as can be, or do you try to say we're going to be talking about this section or this amendment?
Well, we typically it would be way too unwieldy if we were just all over the constitutional map. So, yes, we do focus on one specific constitutional article per Constitution Cafe.
So you want to throw one out there, and then we'll try to do that for the next round of mock Constitutional Cafe?
Well, what I would love to ask is if we had the chance to fulfill Jefferson's dream, Jefferson wanted to do it every 20 years, we're doing it over 200, better late than never. If we had the chance to do this again, would we want to spell out a process for choosing those who craft our Constitution? And if so, what process would we spell out and put in our so-called new Constitution?
All right. So who should be the framers? Who qualifies as the framers? Talking with Christopher Phillips, author of Constitution Cafe, Jefferson's Brew for a True Revolution. I would say, as I was thinking about how to redo the Constitution, I backed up a step and I said, well, here's what we want out of our Constitution. We want some system of government that vaguely reflects popular will, but we don't want it to trample the rights of the minority. We want checks and balances that I like. I like civil liberties. Is that a good enough list? Does it need to be bigger, smaller? Is that an effective way to think about this?
I think it is. I think Jefferson, though, would say we need a system, a lattice of government, in which the people have more of an opportunity to participate continually rather than just on election day every 2 or 4 years. Why? It creates apathy. It creates marginalization. It creates anger. I think that's why we have so much shrillness today, because people have been left out of the process deliberately since the founding era. Jefferson had a notion of something called a ward system of government. I won't go into detail now, but it was a very unique system that I believe can be implemented today, in which all people are participants in governance, but they're not all deciding on the same issues all the time. That'd be absolutely chaotic, but in which they all serve some area, in which they're representatives of the interests of everyone else.
So I would assume that the biggest parts of the Constitution that come in for criticism would be the Electoral College, which seems antiquated and unwieldy and is already produce some undemocratic results, and just the natural-born citizen clause. Am I getting that right?
Well, shall I add a few more?
Yeah.
Well, the problem is that even the so-called strict constructionists, well, they all differ exactly on how the Constitution should be interpreted, but they believe it should be interpreted according to their strict constructionist view. But the thing is, for instance, right now, the Constitution says Congress has the authority, the sole authority, to declare war. There have only been 5 declared wars in U.S. history, the last one in World War II. that authority Congress has unconstitutionally and unconscionably ceded to the President of the United States. You know, they call them conflicts, incursions, whatever, and Congress allows the President to have his way. President does this absolutely ridiculous thing called signing statements, when he basically has created an extra chamber of Congress. Congress enacts a law, the President signs it, but then he says, you know, I like this section of the law, I like this section, that section, but I don't like these other sections, so I'm going to issue a signing statement and only enact those portions of the law I like. That's absolutely unconstitutional. The Supreme Court. You show me where in the Supreme Court it gives them the power of judiciary review. Jefferson was vehemently opposed to that. It puts them on a higher plane than the other two branches of government. They were not meant to have the power to declare what is and isn't constitutional. If they want it, then we have to have an amendment that says they do. So there's lots of areas.
So we have cleared a few lines for Christopher Phillips' question, who gets to be a framer, to put it in a succinct way? Who gets to be a framer of our new Constitution? How do you select who gets a vote or a say? And you'll get a say in that if you give us a call at 212-433-9692. We are speaking with Christopher Phillips, author of Constitution Cafe, Jefferson's Brew for a True Revolution. We'll take a break, and we'll be back in a moment.
Third Amendment. No soldier shall, in time of peace, be quartered in any house without the consent of the owner, nor in time of war, but in a manner to be prescribed by law.
This is Mike Pesca in for Brian Lehrer on WNYC, talking to Christopher Phillips, author of Constitution Cafe, Jefferson's Brew for a True Revolution. Just wanted to quote, that was Brad Sherman, one of the congressmen who read the entire Constitution that kicked off the session of Congress this year. Perhaps the most obscure of the amendments. I believe there has only been one Supreme Court case that even centered on the quartering of soldiers. I'm going to guess that doesn't come up that much in your conversations. Does it, Christopher?
It actually does.
Oh,
because
no.
I'm sorry. Oh no. Well, the thing is, one of the specific reasons Jefferson spelled out in the Declaration for revolting against the king was because they had standing armies on American soil against their own citizens to keep them down in times of peace. So when I gathered in People's Park in Berkeley with activists and soldiers, they wondered, should standing armies have to stand down except in times of peace? Because if they don't, then the commander-in-chief will have the ability to insert American troops in any hot spot around the world he wants to, or make a hot spot even hotter. And they believe that they define time of peace as any time in which the Congress has not declared war. So it would force Congress's hand finally. They would have to have the backbone to actually declare war, or troops would have to stand down.
Wow. There are Third Amendment absolutists out there. Who knew? We're asking again for your calls to Christopher was facilitated discussion. The question is, who gets to be a framer? Who should be the people who are making, and how do we select the people making a constitution? Is a common theme, as I read the book, it seemed that a common theme was that many of the people who spoke to you and who had concerns centered on the vagueness of the language. What does it mean to have a fair and speedy trial? What does the general welfare mean? And usually people were perturbed by this. I would posit that the vagueness, I don't know if it was intentional. I assume that at some points, to get compromised, you'd settle on a vague word rather than a specific word. But the vagueness has, in fact, been one of the strengths of the Constitution. It's what made it the living document. And so one generation's definition of unusual punishment might be different from another generation's. And if all they spelled out was a specific torture technique, the country wouldn't be as good as it is today.
Well, I'll tell you, the originalist thinker on the Supreme Court, Clarence Thomas, argued, in fact, that beating prisoners was not cruel and unusual punishment because our founders would not have thought so. And that's one of the problems. If we don't create a document that advances with human virtue, human morality, human compassion, then maybe we could make those arguments. I'm not sure vagueness in and of itself is the issue, as it is the ability to read into certain parts of the Constitution basically anything you want to. And there's no better example of that than the Second Amendment, the right to bear arms. You can read anything you want to in that absurdly poorly written amendment.
All right. Let's have our framers discussion. John from Nyack David from Queens. You're both on, and the question is, how do we decide who's going to make our Constitution? And John, I'll let you go first, and then Christopher take it from there. But John, what's your idea?
I think it has to come from the stakeholders. I really think we have the technological means today for a much broader, wider town hall, so to speak, via the Internet. I'm not saying the entire population, but if it's not done that way, what's going to happen is you're going to have corporate elites that are going to be choosing. I mean, who serves on the World Trade Organization? I mean, that's they're crafting a sort of world government of sorts through these treaties. We don't even know who those people are. So I don't want the same thing happening with this constitutional convention.
Okay, John, what would your constitutional article look like? Spell it out for me. Let me hear the process for choosing framers.
Oh, well, you know what? It would just have to be probably through some sort of, you know, broader referendum where people would actually run for election to be a part of this. And, you know, the election process could take place via the Internet or locally. But it really, you know, you can't just allow the elected, the current elected leaders or legislatures who are under corporate influence to choose who the people will be, because you'll have, like, the situation we have with the World Trade Organization.
Okay. But I still want to understand. You're saying it should be some sort of referendum. But what would be the process for people of no means, modest means, or great means to vie for the office of framer? What would be that process?
Well, I guess they would have to run. They would have to be afforded the means for them to get their message out there. We certainly shouldn't allow private money like we do in our elections to allow people to campaign. You know, I think private money should be left out of it. I think anyone who can get enough petition signatures should be able to be in a position to run.
Okay, thank you so much.
And David from Queens was our other participant.
Right. Well, I realize that the Constitution is a document of compromises, and if you look at when it was written, the Federalists versus Anti-Federalists, it wasn't unanimous at all. Everything in that document was groups and factions arguing about what should be, and I think our framers today need to represent the true America. I mean, I agree with the previous caller's point, and I would actually use something close to the census and the demographics of America and use that as a guideline about who should be the framers. So it wouldn't just be all moneyed interest, but you'd have a reflection of who America is today in the people who are creating and framing this new document.
So, David, would you then just have a random sampling chosen, not an election, but just have them chosen by random sample?
No, I wouldn't do random sampling. I wouldn't just say, let's pick a name out of a hat, but I would have, okay, if we have 20% of our population being African-American, then 20% of the people should be of African American heritage, or you know,
okay, but how would you? Yes, but how would you choose that 20%? What would be the process?
I think there would be nominating caucuses within those demographic bodies that would nominate. Okay, these are going to be our candidates from the African American caucus, and these would be our. I mean, it would be a complex process, but almost the way we nominate presidential candidates, you would have these caucuses, the Native American caucus. Okay, let's. You're going to have to choose your process, and maybe each caucus would have some liberty about how they're going to nominate their people. I think it would
Wonderful.
Be complex, it would be confusing, mm-hmm. but it would be American in the way that you wouldn't have 100 senators today where, I don't know what percent, but a high percentage uh-huh. are white and rich.
Uh-huh. I like that.
You have, yeah, I mean, one thing that I also find troubling about, and I'm speaking very liberally, but also at the same time, America, when it was created, was a white Christian nation, and I think a lot of people today look at the freedoms of America and they realize what's happening in Europe could happen in America, where America might become Eastern cultural or it might become not this white Christian nation. And as someone who's fairly open-minded, I still struggle with what's America going to look like if, you know, one day we don't have, you know, we have Barack Obama today, but is it always going to be based on white Christian ideals, and how do we ensure that without coming off as racist or creating a problematic anti-freedom documents? And I think that's an inherent struggle in saying we're going to allow freedom, but we still want to keep it based on kind of a white European-centered values.
Well, Mike, do I have time to tell a little anecdote?
You have, and then I'm going to give you my idea for this. But go ahead.
Okay, Mike. Well, it just the fact is that until early in the 20th century, white males who were legal immigrants to the United States who still had citizenship in another country, they could vote in federal elections. They could run in federal elections. Yet black Americans and women who were American citizens had no such right. That's how weird voting rights have been since our nation's origins.
Was this because the framers weren't American-born?
I think it's mainly because it allowed those who were wealthy, and they tended to be white males, so that they had all the clout. The only state at our origins that allowed for black Americans and women to vote was the great state of New Jersey. It was the only one. And the vested white male affluent interests finally got that taken out of their very progressive original constitution.
My idea would be we get a list of everyone who's ever run for federal or statewide office in the last 40 years and gotten 40% of the vote. So I just don't want all the winners, but I want any viable candidate. We randomly choose 150 of them, or maybe 100, I don't know, pick a number. And they get to either come themselves or nominate a proxy. So, you know, maybe a lot of them will say, I'm not smart enough for this, but Robert Bork, he's my man. That'd be how I did it. What do you think of that?
Why?
Well, I think we want someone the founders were really smart. They weren't demographically representative of the country, but man, were they smart and man, were they good at what they did. And I think that there's something in the notion of the elite that needs to be preserved. Or at least that has value. So this is a rough end around getting the elite, yes, but also not saying just those crazy people who are so egotistical to have run for office should do it. Right. Maybe they get to nominate a smart guy.
I think that there's a lot to what you say, but that I think a lot of regular folks who typically are kept out of the process are very, very smart too, and that we don't give common people the chance to reveal their uncommonly perceptive ideas so that they might become part of the elite. And Jefferson himself tried to create a process from land distribution to a really superb public education that would have allowed them to become part of what he called a natural aristocracy and become the cream of the crop themselves.
Thurgood Marshall and people who have quoted Thurgood Marshall saying this have themselves been criticized, says of the Constitution or the framers, the government they devised was defective from the start, requiring several amendments, a civil war, and momentous social transformation to attain the system of constitutional government and its respect for the individual freedoms and human rights we hold as fundamental today. When contemporary Americans cite the Constitution, they invoke a concept that is vastly different from what the framers barely began to construct two centuries ago. Do you think Justice Marshall had it right?
Well, you know, there's a lot of Justice Marshall quotes we could take. Justice Marshall also believed that there was something higher than the Constitution, and I quote that in my book. I don't have it chapter and verse in front of me. But namely, he said that was the people. And then if they believe that the ideals of the Declaration of Independence were not being adhered to in our constitutional Republican system, then it behooved them to, frankly, revolt and to try to create the system anew.
Is there evidence that the Constitution got some of the fundamental questions right as opposed to it just being early? I think of the fact that most of the world has a parliamentary system and we decidedly don't.
Well, I think the framers performed an incredible feat. You have to understand that I am not – when I hold these types of dialogues, one of the reasons I do so is so that participants can come to a keener and more profound appreciation of what exactly it is the framers accomplished, because the fact of the matter is that poll after poll show that most Americans have not read the Constitution any time recently. And yet this is the document that dictates and determines and guides virtually every facet of our lives. By engaging these Constitution Cafe dialogues, among other things, they come to a greater appreciation of that, an imaginative exercise that enables them and inspires them to come to a more concrete appreciation of what the framers did, in fact, accomplish.
Let's go to Anita in Manhattan. Hello, Anita.
Yes. Good morning,
good
gentlemen.
Morning. Now, before – I know you want to speak about a specific amendment. Why don't you tell me which amendment it is, and then we will play that amendment.
Oh, excellent. I want to choose, and let this continue. I hope this will be a 2 times monthly at least forum. I'm going to pass on to other people. I hope you have an easy podcast because this needs to be listened to. This is just intriguing. Thank you so much.
We certainly.
I want to elect the 13th Amendment, and there's some interesting, and you're bringing out of the European white orientation, there's some interesting ideas as to whether that was a design in the Constitution from the original slavery where it's been used to, through Nixon and Reagan, to target the African descendant and forcibly as became citizens. That's another aspect that needs to be discussed because blacks didn't realize that maybe they wouldn't become citizens, such as in the 13th Amendment.
So what is your case?
Right.
I just wanted to – well, first of all, I thought that you were going to talk about the 4th Amendment.
Okay.
We don't have the 13th Amendment on tape, which is just the abolishment of slavery. But tell me, what is your change to the 13th? Be specific.
If I could have it in front of me, I would could be more specific. But generally, I might eliminate it, it from the aspect where it says involuntary servitude if you're convicted of a felony.
Yes, I'll read it. I'll read it. Neither slavery nor involuntary servitude, except as a punishment for crime, whereof the party shall be duly convicted, shall exist within the United States or any place subject to their jurisdiction.
I would just make it the fact that slavery could not exist, you know, and I'd have to think about the actual wording of it.
Simpler. Yes. Neither slavery shall be abolished, something like that. So what's the history behind that amendment, Christopher Phillips?
Well, I was just going to ask Anita, do you still think that Americans, even if we don't use the word slavery, do you think that there's still many Americans who live under some form of subjugation?
Oh, absolutely. Brilliant scholar, Michelle Alexander, I think WNYC has had her on, called The New Jim Crow. There's the guy from the Wall Street Journal, Slavery by Another Name. There's Professor Muhammad's The Condemnation of Blackness. When you look at the war on drugs and how it's been used against targeted populations of the African and people of color, and then Michelle argues that it's also swept up people who have the status of being, because it is a status of being white in the society. And when you have 1 in 100 people in jail or prison and 1 in 1,000 in China, you know, I mean, there's just so many aspects of that part of our society. Mm-hmm. And we have a slippery slope post-September 11th, 01, because when we should have been looking at how, you know, you have that prison population.
Okay, Anita, you know what? I just wanted to focus on the 13th, and I do want to thank you for the call. But is that you could, and Christopher Phillips, you could talk about what she's saying, or you could talk about how often that the 13th Amendment is something that people want to change. But go ahead, take it in any direction you care to.
Well, it's not. I didn't include this dialogue in my book. I couldn't include all of them, but there were a number of people who examined that and just talked about the fact that if all of your waking hours are monopolized by work. You know, there's many people who are working very low-wage jobs, two and even three of them. It's not that they don't just have no leisure time, but they don't have time to participate in civic life. And if that is the case, and I would dare say there's probably millions of Americans in those straits, is that a form of subjugation, even if we don't use that word typically? And if so, should we revisit this 13th Amendment that Anita was so thoughtfully referring to?
And the last thought from a caller, Mary called in to say, no changes to the Constitution. I'm happy it's still alive. How do we engage with you, Christopher, beyond the book Constitution Cafe? Because a few people are asking that question.
How do we? Well, the whole idea is for people to start creating Constitution working groups. Not a very sexy name, but if they go to our nonprofit website at constitutioncafe.org, we're developing a page that spells out how they can start their own Constitution working group so they can start talking about these things. The whole idea is to spark a conversation about our existing document in ways that we can engage thoughtfully yet passionately, but rationally and discursively, and do away with the shrillness and discourse. There are so many people across the political spectrum who believe that our existing system is dysfunctional. the idea is to bring them together to look and see whether the Constitution itself is contributing to that dysfunctional system, and if so, what types of changes we can at least imaginatively make to it. And when you engage in thoughtful discourse where everybody has a chance to have a say, where we really scrutinize in a way that inspires rather than intimidates, maybe over time we'll create the type of foundational common ground among people of radically disparate views that will spur greater involvement in many dimensions of civic life. And we're just using the Constitution as a springboard for doing that.
Well, I got to say, this would be a great PBS series. And if it doesn't, if they don't pick it up, you have to do a series of web videos, because I think it could really stoke the fires of the sort of people who are into civics. Christopher Phillips, author of Constitution Cafe, Jefferson's Brew for a True Revolution. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
And up in a moment, we'll be talking about the new movie Moneyball and the theories behind it. Stay tuned.